office suit?
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Well, I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Welcome in to Aural Pleasure, our very first episode, a collection of unique sounds for the first week of July. I'm Billy Rutledge, along with Miles Morton and Clay Abels. Guys, we are making podcast history today.
You damn right. If y'all didn't know, Billy's actually the dude who introduces all the movies. That's exactly who you sound like.
Okay.
You sound like you introduce movies for
and
a living.
Now.
Exactly.
This summer. Exactly. Hey, if you got the voice, you got to flaunt it. You know what I mean? Hey. And that's why we're starting this podcast, because we got so many opinions. We got so many things we want to talk about. We're going to try to do it in a creative and cool way, introducing sound of the entire week.
Oh yeah, man, it's gonna be awesome, it's gonna be dope, and plus we all three different people, so Billy is one of the coolest dudes you'll ever meet. He is actually one of the producers of KSR, so he is like the Ben Affleck of the group, because
he's the Ben Affleck.
Yeah,
of the
he's
group?
The Ben, everybody like Ben Affleck.
Not in that Batman movie that he had. So maybe the new nickname for me is the Batman Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah.
For this
there
podcast.
We go. He's a Batman Ben BBB. Affleck.
Clay Abels doesn't necessarily work with us at iHeartRadio, but
no,
you know, he just kind of follows us around like puppy dogs.
It turns out when you bring food into a door, everybody just lets you in. You just eventually you end up being here for multiple years. You turn it into a career.
I wonder if you can do that to the White House. Like, just walk up with some pizzas. And just
I think
like,
you
yeah.
get tackled to the ground pretty quickly,
know.
Miles.
I don't know. Hey, KSR got into the White House. Anything's possible.
That's true. God. They did. And Miles doing a lot of things around here as well.
Damn right, man.
And now jumping on with the podcasting scene. You have one of your own as well, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I got my own podcast, too. It's called Power Trip, me and my homie Keith. And right now, we taking a break from it for a while because we have way too many episodes. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to let the people simmer on that. But yeah, man, if anytime y'all want to send us the hate mail from Power Trip, make sure you just direct it at me, at Black and Miles on Twitter, because Lord knows I get that every day.
So Aural Pleasure, Aural, it's a real word, and it has to do with audio, sound, and the business that we are in. So yeah. We go through our topics through the sound that we play, and we'll start it off. Miles, what do we got first?
Having Magic Johnson, not just running basketball operations in LA, but him as a mentor, as a guide for all the things LeBron James wants to do in business for the rest of his career and then beyond his basketball career. In every way, it makes sense.
He told me he was shocked, you know, and all these major free agents, and he was one of them, you know, got to 1201 on the beginning of free agency. He had no offers. And I'll repeat that again. He had no offers, not from the Pelicans, not from nobody. And so he was very confused, very distraught. He decided that with their excitement about him potentially coming, that he wanted to be a Golden State Warrior and took the mid-level exception to do it.
The Warriors can sign Boogie, Prince, Michael Jordan, anybody they want. They still ain't going to win with this team right here. Lakers with LeBron. You don't give my son the best player in the game. Don't think he's going to win no championships.
So that's Adrian Wojnarowski, Mark Spears, and LaVar Ball getting all their opinions in about the recent NBA free agency. And guys, it's been crazy. LeBron James, the historic decision now to go to the Los Angeles Lakers. DeMarcus Cousins continuing to ruin the league, now going to the Warriors on a one-year deal. And Paul George, OKC, staying put. What's the biggest move so far for you guys?
I feel like the biggest move was the move that was made, the fact that Paul George stayed. I don't understand why you would stay with Oklahoma City. Honestly, I don't see anything happening there. I mean, it's great that he's showing some loyalty. But then again, when it comes to business, I'm sorry. I don't see what's the point of being loyal to a team in the first place. So I don't see why he didn't leave.
Well, he's making $137 million over the next 4 years. So he's going to get his. It's just a matter of what happened in that Utah series last year. I mean, did we suddenly forget how terrible of a player Playoff P is?
Yeah.
I mean, he gave himself that nickname and then scored 0 points in the deciding game versus Utah.
The biggest short-term move is DeMarcus Cousins because, let's be honest, it locks up the title next year for the Warriors. Nobody's going to compete with him. This thing's going to be a sweep. But the best long-term move is clearly LeBron James to the Los Angeles Lakers. A 4-year deal, 3 years before his option. He's committed there. And with all these everybody's kind of confused right now. They're saying, why Lance Stephenson? Why JaVale McGee? Why even Rajon Rondo going to the Lakers? These are all one-year deals. These guys will go through the year, they'll compete, they'll make the playoffs, and then the deck will be open to let guys like Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, all these guys will be on the open market next year, and to see what things are happening. Okay. So short term, it's DeMarcus. Long term,
pump the brakes on DeMarcus Cousins. Okay, I really like the guy, especially coming out of University of Kentucky, and he's done a pretty good job staying out of trouble off the court. But he's coming off an Achilles tear, and this is a pretty serious injury for athletes. This isn't one that you just get back into things and you're immediately contributing 45 and 15 day one. He's going to be back in January, February, and once the Warriors are rolling, then he can kind of go into the lineup. But it's not like he's going to be this everyday night that's going to be making the same strides as he did in Sacramento or New Orleans.
Exactly. Even the Mamba couldn't avoid the downfall of the Achilles tear. But my biggest thing is this. Everybody keeps thinking that the Warriors have this locked up.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something, man. When you have a top-heavy league, which is the West, you have the Warriors, still nasty. The Lakers got nasty. You still got the Spurs. You still got the Rockets. I'm sorry, even the Nuggets are competitive.
Mm-hmm.
The Minnesota Timberwolves. Let me tell you something. The team that people need to watch, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a fan, but the Boston Celtics are the team to watch this NBA season. For the simple fact, I'm going to tell you, I feel like the Western Conference is going to go through the same thing that the SEC Conference in football went through in 2009 to 2011. They're going to beat each other up.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to the big game, you're talking about the Celtics. Who's the biggest issue in the East right now?
By the way, podcast listeners, Miles is a huge Celtics fan. Damn so right. We take this with a grain of salt.
But I'm just saying, look, our biggest issue in the East with Boston is we got Philly and I guess the Heat.
Yeah, I guess. It ain't going to be the Cavs.
Exactly. So watch this. We get through them. 9 times out of 10, once we get Gordon Hayward back and Kyrie Irving, we're probably going to sweep some teams. Now, you telling me that the Lakers are just going to get swept by Golden State? I don't see that happening.
No, probably not.
I don't see Houston just getting swept either. So they're going to have some tired players come to the finals, man.
This is all cute, but like in the SEC, after they had all those teams jump up, who's the one still winning all the national championships? It's Alabama. And the same thing when it comes into the NBA side of things. We can talk about Houston. Los Angeles, first of all, they're not going to be competitive this year. They'll make the playoffs, but it's LeBron and who? And he's actually in a, as Miles said, a real conference right now. What's
they're going to make the conference finals. LeBron James always makes it.
No, that is very up in the air. But from the Western Conference standpoint, DeMarcus Cousins, you all were talking about, he's not going to be the same player. They don't want him to be the same player. They have four other All-Stars. They don't need him to get 25 and 15. They need DeMarcus Cousins to just be an upgrade over JaVale McGee. That'll be already with a bad leg. He will be a drastic upgrade of JaVale McGee.
He's going to be the third Splash Brother.
The third Splash Brother. We got to get this right. The third Splash Brother.
We're still taking applications. Don't worry.
I'll say one thing before we end this NBA talk, guys. Dynasties like the Golden State Warriors, due to individual greatness, are compelling. But when you're stacking the deck like this and you're continuing to get this mismatch, I think that you're going to run into some trouble and you're going to see people look at the Golden State Warriors dynasty and say that was a different time in the NBA and it may not be as great as something like the Bulls dynasty in the 90s.
I think what this is going to signify, you know, call the end of, excuse me, is going to be it's going to be a cleansing period. Once this year is over, DeMarcus Cousins' contract is up, Draymond Green's extension, he declined it. Kevin Durant did the 1-1 option, and also Klay Thompson's contract's up in the air. I think what we're going to see here is it'll be the end, I think, and what we'll see is the end of an incredible run, kind of similar to what Kobe and Shaq had, where they went the three-peat and they dominated the world. They did the 15-1 postseason record back in 01, but then things will go back to kind of normal, and I agree with Billy. We're not going to see this type of just flat-out dominant superstars. I mean, this is like the 60s Celtics having these many all-stars on one squad.
See how Nanky's getting popped up?
Continue. What, the Celtics? anytime we can put them into the ether, Miles is going to be happy. But I think it'll be a bad year for the league in terms of competition. The Warriors will roll through, and I think at the end of it, though, everybody will have their championships. DeMarcus, he'll move on to greener pastures to get more money. Same thing for Draymond, same thing for Klay, and maybe even Kevin Durant, because remember, 2-year deal, but it's a 1-year option. So there's a lot of opportunities here. So I think it's a bad short-term thing, but in the long term, it'll open things back up to where it goes back to more of the normal basketball. We see 5 or 6 teams compete for the title.
All this talk, we still haven't even mentioned LeBron with the Lakers, 4 years, $154 million deal. Do you look bad at his decision to leave Cleveland for a second time, Miles? Or is it like he brought a championship there, go on and do your own thing wherever you want?
I would have never came back to Cleveland in the first place.
retweet.
You ain't that kind of guy.
Here's my thing, man. I love LeBron. And honestly, he is probably my favorite player in the league right now. But the thing that LeBron has never had is a great coach with a great front office. He's never had both. And I'm telling you this, man. If he became a Laker earlier in his career, or if he was a Celtic earlier, or a Spur, or even a Houston Rocket. You know what? And honestly, watch this. Even if he was the Thunder, because they actually got some good management. They're just a small market team trying to figure it out. Dude, if he has any of those things, he has eight. He has seven, six championships by now. But he let fandom, because he was a fan of the Cavs, basically. You feel me? He was a fan of Ohio.
He's from Cleveland. But it's more than just being a fan.
You feel me? He's from there. He's basically me with Louisville. You feel me? If Louisville got a football, a basketball team, an NFL team, whatever pro team we get, except soccer. We'll get to that later. I'm going to be all in for it. I'll even abandon whatever pro team I have now. I get it. But the thing was this. He did that off emotion. He did that because of the emotion. He did that for the people.
Yeah.
But now he's done everything he needs to do. And now we're about to see real LeBron. And honestly, as a Celtic fan, I hope he can win a few titles with the Lakers, but not as many as Boston.
Well, you know, that consecutive streak of finals that he's been to may come to an end this season now that he's in the Western Conference. But we'll have to check that out and see some other Louisville and Kentucky guys during this NBA free agency period. Julius Randle going to New Orleans on a two-year, $18 million deal each year. Nerlens Noel, weird story, turns down what, $70 million with the Dallas Mavericks a year ago?
Yep.
And now he signs for $3 million over 2 years with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, that's when you bet on yourself and it goes the exactly wrong direction.
Yeah,
you
went to Horseshoe Casino, betted on black, and it came up on zero green. So, I mean, that's just bad. Like, and the thing is, I don't know what made him do that in the first place. Like, let's be honest. Nerlens Noel, when he was at UK, he was all right. He was decent until the injury where they basically went off to lose Robert Morris. I just had to get that in.
Okay, I'm glad you did.
But he's great, but he's not outstanding. He's not somebody I would pay to go see. I'm not paying a game to go see Nerlens Noel.
Right. All right, what do we got next, Miles?
Okay, so I would encourage our viewers also, and that's one of the reasons I wanted you to come on, so people would know what is happening out there beyond their own world, and that people like you are writing things like this. And I'm quoting, maybe Baldwin was right when he said we are dealing with moral monsters, i.e. white people. How would you feel about a piece that described black people as moral monsters? You would rightly call that racist, wouldn't you? Why is this not the same?
Well, you're proof texting and changing the argument by doing so. Again, I would encourage your viewers to read the entire piece. I think we've entered into a dangerous
space. Is it okay is it okay to suggest a group of people on the basis of their race are moral monsters? I mean, do you think that a person's race affects his moral standing? One race is better than another? Tell me what you think.
What I think is very important is if people, again, read the piece and look at the world in which we live, and many of the things that we've seen, from the enslavement of people in the country to black codes, to the Civil War, to Reconstruction, to disproportionate incarceration, to a misunderstanding of immigration, and that many people in the country outside of the white race certainly have some feelings that are not positive about their treatment
now. Well, sure. Abetting racism? Hold on. Here's your quote from you. Why are so many white Americans so brutally mean and inhumane? If I wrote the sentence, why are so many black Americans so brutally mean and inhumane, which I would never write, how would you respond to that? Wouldn't you say you're a racist, as you clearly are?
No. The first thing that I would do is I would read the piece. And I think, unfortunately, as I talked to your producer this afternoon, I mean, being pugnacious with people like you and I, when we don't know one another, certainly, but we're both Americans, it makes for good television. But it doesn't make for people understanding
I'm quoting your piece.
So that was a clip from the Tucker Carlson Show, where Ricky Jones, a professor at the University of Louisville and also host a radio show at iHeartRadio here in Louisville, went on to talk about a recent opinion piece he did with the Courier-Journal, in which he had a quote that came from James Baldwin, in which he mentioned the moral monsters that are white people in America today. This is a really interesting topic because it not only has to do with us here locally. Miles Morton is a part of the Ricky Jones show as well, and he has some very strong opinions about it. Miles, where do you come at this with how Tucker Carlson approached this? It seems like he took one sentence of the entire piece and labeled Ricky a racist.
Yep.
Before he was able to actually explain what he meant by it.
That's exactly what it is. And one thing I love about Ricky, see, Ricky, this is what it's called, the Ricky Jones show, not the Miles Morton show, because I don't have that composure. I'm not as nice as Ricky. Ricky is a very nice gentleman. Now, granted, if you ever listen to our show, he will say, if you ever want to fight him butt naked in the middle of the street on Broadway, he is all for that. And Tucker, I'm down for that action. But that was the biggest issue with that. He took one sentence and Ricky kept trying to say, hey, if you read the whole article, if you read the whole article, you'll see where this has context and substance.
And he kept belaboring that point, but to the point of you had to read the rest of the article to actually figure out the significance of it. That comment that Tucker Carlson kept bringing up was the, why are so many white Americans so brutally mean and inhumane?
Right.
But if you continue that paragraph, and bear with me for a second, you will understand what it means. And it says, why do so many others feel comfortable justifying or excusing it? Why do others still, who claim they don't think that way, find it acceptable to say little and do even less? Make no mistake, there are certainly whites who stand in the tradition of William Lloyd Garrison, John Brown, and others. However, reasonable people must admit they are the exceptions and not the rules. Clay.
The thing going on the piece, and I read the piece after watching the interview we had with Tucker, is we've turned into, and I think we see this in everything, but it's especially a problem now in the culture of politics and media, where we just decide to jump on one quote or one piece of the article or video, and we just decide that's what it's all about. And to the point that, Billy, you started off talking about here, and Dr. Ricky Jones mentioned in the interview, that wasn't his quote. That was the quote from Baldwin that he put in the piece. That wasn't Ricky's opinion. He just brought up the idea of what Baldwin was saying and then went into detail about how that related. And somehow Tucker Carlson decided that was Ricky's quote and turned it into, you know, why are you a racist? And why, you know, why? What if I said black people were like this? And it's like, you're taking something that Ricky didn't even say. He just put in the piece that was said by a legendary
writer.
Well,
actually, I'll stop you there, because Ricky did have the comment of why are so many white Americans so brutally mean and inhumane. It was Tucker Carlson. It was actually James Baldwin who had mortal monsters.
And that's what Tucker tried to jump on first, and it turned into something else. And that's, like I said, that's the issue, is that we've just turned into, let's make one quote the whole story. And from Tucker's standpoint, I just don't understand bringing Ricky on the show if you want to have a debate. He brings him on and he tries to ask him a question. Ricky, as Miles said, really politely tries to explain what, you know, hey, you need to read the piece. This is what I was trying to get across and just, you know, bring up from a different perspective. And every time Ricky tried to answer, as you heard in the clip, Tucker just jumps on him. He doesn't even let him finish the answer. And you can see Ricky's just sitting there trying to be as calm as can be. But at some point, I mean, what are you supposed to do if somebody just keeps jumping over top of your answers? You're not going to come to a conclusion or get anywhere in the debate.
We need to have these discussions, but it has to be an actual discussion. You know, it can't just be a Fox News host. These television shows where you have a host in one box and a guest in another, you're never going to get anything done in those types of scenarios. You're going to have a host. You're going to go to the next segment right after that's over. You have no time for reflection. It's not the best way to get something done, to figure something out, to talk out your problems. And it just seems like he was using him to call him a racist.
And that's really what it is. But the thing was, and this is why, like, as soon as that happened, I even text Ricky. I was like, yo, you think he would ever come on the Ricky Jones show? Because the way we do our show here, it's me, 12, Ricky Jones, and we sometimes have a guest. But there's even been times me and Ricky have not seen eye to eye. But one thing I can say about Ricky is he'll let me finish my point. He'll let me say what I want, even if it's not something he totally agrees with, even if it's something he's passionately against. What y'all saw on TV compared to what you hear on the air, that's Ricky Jones, and he's a doctor. He's Dr. Ricky Jones. That's Dr. Ricky Jones there. On Real 93.1, you'll see him really get let loose on that. But the thing is with Tucker Carlson, bro, at the same time, he knows his base does not want to hear. His viewers do not want to hear a logical explanation. His base wants to hear some black guy calling a bunch of white folk racist, so they can flip that to be reverse racism. That's what they want to hear. And honestly, that's how you get your ratings. And he knows what he's doing. But that's one reason why you don't see Tucker Carlson coming outside his arena either. When's the last time you seen this man debate anybody or talk to anybody on any other news network?
Well, going back in the day, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Jon Stewart went on a show Tucker Carlson did. It was called Crossfire. It was him, and I forget who the other guy that did the show with, but Jon Stewart just went at him for a good 20 minutes and talked about, you know, how you're failing the political media climate and how you're not, you know, you're just going after and talking about how great you are, how bad the liberals or whatnot is. And he said, you know, you're doing a disservice to your show. And eventually, you know, Tucker Carlson lost his job back in the early 2000s because of what Jon Stewart did on that show. Now he's back with Fox News. But as you know, as Miles said, you want to start a debate and you want to have a discussion. You want to eventually get somewhere. And I think that's why radio is the best option, because Ricky said it on air. Tucker was trying to, you know, push him into a corner, and he goes, "We don't have enough time to get into the point I'm trying to make. This is a 6-minute segment." And then Tucker just gets mad at the end and goes, "All right, we'll see you later." Like, that doesn't solve anything. And at the end of the day, I think it makes Tucker look bad, and it makes Ricky go, "Why did I waste my time and, you know, come out to the studio here today?" It's just, to me, there's no winners in it except for the people that want to hear Tucker's rhetoric over and over again.
I'll tell you this, Ricky ain't waste his time, and the Courier Journal loves Ricky right now, because I guarantee you, if you listen to what Ricky said the whole time, Ricky never went into the whole paragraph. He never read the paragraph. What did he say? If you read
the piece.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. You had somebody who was mad at Ricky. All right, well, you know what? I'm going to read your whole piece. Oh, and you know what that was? That was a click where to the Louisville Courier Journal, probably from somewhere from Nebraska, from Wisconsin, or whatever. Ricky knows how to play the game. That's why he's my dog.
And if you want to read that opinion piece, go ahead to the Courier Journal and you read it. And before we move on, I do want to mention one part in that piece that Ricky Jones wrote. He was saying, if we do identify white Americans as moral monsters, then, quote, our white brothers and sisters will be inclined to make decisions based on human decency rather than economic and political calculations or privilege maintenance. Do you believe that's how we work in today's age? We have no decency for anyone. It's all about making sure I have the best opportunity coming up. I am in the best situation, not my fellow brothers and sisters.
That's the American dream, man. Honestly, if you look at it, and I'm talking about, we can go all the way back. In fact, one of my favorite parts of history to study is the Italian mafia. I love mob movies. That's just me. But one thing, if you look about the Italian mafia, man, they stay together. They hired their own. They work with their own. They ate with their own. They built with their own. They invested with their own. And honestly, I hate to say it, that's the American dream. The American dream has always been, let me get mine. You fast forward a few decades later, you go to New York, that still happens. You, like, seriously, I got a question for
you. So it's human nature.
It's human nature to be part of a group. It's human nature to want to be part of a collective. It's a human nature to only want to look out for people like you. Now, that's the thing that we need as a society to come away from. How do we come away from our animalistic tribal mentality to want to be with ones like us because we feel safe and comfortable than going out and networking with others to make this world a better place? Mm-hmm. And that is literally one of the biggest issues that we have in our society, is because it's easy for me to stay in Western Louisville all my life. I know everybody. You feel me? I grew up there. I know what the food tastes like. But I've benefited more by going out to St. Matthews with guys like you. I benefited more by going out to Bax's on a Saturday night and party with people like that, because now I learn more. Now I see more. Now I can make better connections. Now I can take what I just saw from your community. Hey, you know what? Y'all got that Top Golf coming up at St. Matthews? Word? Let me go back down here to my city. I'm like, all right, look, we need to invest because I got some dope stuff. Let's see if we can invest that here and make that work.
You think Tucker Carlson goes out of his comfort zone often like that?
Hell no!
I don't think Tucker Carlson's been out of his comfort zone since he was about 7 years old.
That doesn't exist. Let me tell you something about people like Tucker Carlson real quick, though, man. Tucker Carlson's the type of person, Jay-Z said it best, loud as a motorbike but would never bust a grape in a fruit fight. Tucker Carlson is the type of person, if we was walking on the same sidewalk and I was coming towards him, I guarantee you he'd cross the street.
All right, well, before we alienate almost half of our audience by trashing Tucker Carlson, let's go to our next topic and stick local here in Louisville. What do we got next, Miles?
Amazing, when you think back now, it's just been 4 years since Louisville City said, we're bringing a soccer team to the city of Louisville. And look where we are now, 4 years later.
What's been done here is phenomenal. It really is. And pretty much every one of us has played soccer at some point in our lives. To see it happen at this level, when I moved to Louisville 20 years ago, what passed for professional sports took place in a pretty tired little area down at the fairgrounds. And where we have come since then on so many fronts, on so many sports.
You know, for those of us that have been into dedicated, specific soccer stadiums, it's all the difference in the world. When you're right there, right on the sideline, giving advice to that opposing team's goalie, letting him know how he can up his game, and let him know the spirit and the spunk that we bring from Louisville City.
How awesome, as he said at the end, the way in which all these sports and all these things that we love have come together here in this special place we call home.
Much like the spirit of Louisville City is, that's the spirit of our city right now. You see construction everywhere, unemployment's low, investments taking place all over the city. So Louisville City is an apt metaphor for the kind of winning that's taking place in our city right now. So good job to everybody on that.
That was Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher and Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin talking about the Louisville City FC groundbreaking of their new Butcherstown Stadium, a $65 million stadium that will seat over 11,000 people, expected to open around 2020. And this is just an interesting, crazy story here in Louisville, because the next day, James O'Connor, the head coach of Louisville City FC, now leaves for Orlando FC. You have the groundbreaking ceremony. What a bright future we have here in the city of Louisville for soccer. And then their head coach, who is responsible for so much of their early success, now leaves for a different club now in the MLS. Clay Abels is the play-by-play voice of Louisville City FC, so he knows the ins and outs of the soccer club. Were you surprised by the move that he left the day after the groundbreaking, or is this something that you just chalk up to the coaching profession as a whole?
I think you're right in the wording they... there, Billy. It was the day after the move. That was what made it so surprising, is I think everybody that's been around this team for the last couple years, especially after the tremendous run to the championship last year for the USL title, we all knew James O'Connor was on the way out at some point. I mean, it was just a matter of time. He's had too much success too fast to not get an MLS opportunity. The Orlando City thing was in the works just because he started off his career coaching at Orlando City and then came up to take the Louisville City job. It's just the timing of it, doing it right during the middle of the season, and as you said, right after the groundbreaking. And it was a very odd moment, because I was out there for the groundbreaking, and you know, there's 300 Cooper fans out there, 790s out covering the event. It's just a great day to, you know, promote a professional soccer stadium that's going to be coming to the city in just a couple years. Everybody's on a high, and the next day you just feel like the ceiling drops out, losing James O'Connor, and it's just a weird situation. But as I said on the broadcast Saturday, I think overall it's a great thing that he left, not because you want to lose a great coach, but it means you're doing things the right way. When coaches move up the ladder, going back to what Charlie Strong did going to Texas, that means things are going well at the University of Louisville. It means we're winning football games. You never want to lose a guy like that, but it means things are going in the right direction. And I think it's just going to come down to simply, you're not going to be able to compete with an MLS job. It's just the reality of it. MLS is bigger than USL. However, with this, you got a lot out of James O'Connor. You got a championship. He is a major reason they are building that stadium here in 2020. So I think it's a win overall for everybody. It's just tough that's coming at midseason and right after the groundbreaking.
Right. I was going to bring that up. I know the coaching profession as a whole is a very fickle business. You know, your job security, you never really know. You don't know if you can take a bigger job, but mid-season. I mean, imagine Bill Belichick leaving the Patriots during week 11 because he wants to take a different job. I mean, I know that it's different in the NFL, but can you not translate the same way between USL and MLS, or is it just a completely different jump where it doesn't matter what part of the season you are or how good you are, I'm going to take this next job?
I think it goes back to the last topic we talked about with Ricky Jones and having that individual mindset. When you're a coach at any level, high school, college, pro, whether it's on the soccer side or NFL, you're just going to take the best opportunity at whatever time it comes up. Now, this is what I heard from around the team. I don't know how true this is. Orlando City came in with an offer. He said, look, it's not enough. And they came back with more money. And he decided, you know what? That's too much to turn down. Money talks, especially when it's arguably, you know, maybe 7 or 8 times what he was making here. I mean, it was big time money. I don't know the figure, but it was pretty high up there. And he took it and ran with it. And I don't have a problem with it. The weirdest one I ever saw is, I don't know if you guys remember this. This is a little before our time. But John L. Smith, when he coached at Louisville, he was going to the Liberty Bowl. And there was the rumor, and it was true, that he was interviewing for, I believe it was Michigan State. And at halftime, the woman, the silent reporter, I forget her name, but she goes, you know, hey, we hear you're interviewing for the job. And he ran off the field and had to tell his team at halftime he had to leave after the game to interview with Michigan State. That's the weirdest one I've seen. The midseason thing, yeah, it is awkward. But to be honest, we all saw it coming up the grapevine. It was just a matter of time.
Miles, will you ever care about a soccer team in Louisville that's not in the MLS league?
Just like the coaches just left? No.
Ooh.
I'm just being real. We know. Here's the thing. The money's cool. The money's great. But this is what I've been saying for years, man. Like, being in Louisville all my life, we are the minor league capital of the world, man. We've done had almost every minor league team you can think about. ABA basketball, the River Frogs, the Panthers. Oh, I can go back. The Cardinals. Louisville Bats, now Louisville FC. We even had the Kentucky Stick Horses. That's a minor league lacrosse team. Like, dude, I don't blame them. Forget the money. Like I said, I understand Louisville's hyped about this. I know it looks great. But at the same time, this coach has an ego. Now watch this, Billy.
Yeah.
What if ESPN came to you right now? You're loyal to iHeart. You like working here and all that stuff.
Right.
ESPN comes to you right now. You're going to do the exact same thing, but on our network. What are you doing?
You bumping up that pay?
Psst, dude, we're going to give you $5 extra. Who cares? Are you going to ESPN?
Well, I'm going.
It's ESPN. Look, $5 extra. If they gave him 50, but you know what, Billy? Forget the whole money. It's still ESPN. The thing is this, at the end of the day, it's MLS. Like, I understand people keep telling me, well, this is still professional soccer. This is great. But at the end of the day, I can't play Louisville FC on FIFA.
Right.
At the end of the day, I can't go to New York or go to Florida and be like, yeah, I'm a Louisville FC fan. Unless someone who's in that culture, like, I'm not even a soccer fan, and I know who the Seattle, I know who the Timbers are and the Seattle Sounders are.
So you dream, when you're a kid, you dream of being a coach in the MLS. You don't dream of being a coach of somebody in the USL. Whether that's fair or foul, that's to the reality of it. And that's the situation that Louisville has found themselves in as a lower market, minor league type of city.
I have no problem with Miles is saying about the coaching side. I mean, look, everybody, as you just said, dreams of being an MLS coach, an NFL coach, an NBA coach. There's no doubt about it. But here's what I would say about the Louisville City thing. It is, as I think we talked about on Howie Lindsay's show last week, it is a stepping stone in the sense that if you can prove to the executives and the communities around that you can have people support your minor league soccer team, which they are doing very well right now. They're getting about 8,000 people out for a Wednesday night soccer game, which is pretty rare for minor league soccer.
But Miles doesn't care.
Miles doesn't care, but there's a lot of people that do, and when you can show that you can have people support a minor league team, then you can start to entertain the thoughts about, hey, maybe they should have a shot at an MLS team, or hey, if they support this minor league soccer team, why not see if they can, you know, there's a talk about the NBA, let's see if let's throw a WNBA team around there and see if we can move up the ladder. It's something to build upon. It's not the ultimate destination, it's the journey to get to the bigger thing.
I will say a USL Louisville City FC ticket is much cheaper than if it was an MLS team. I mean, it's a much more family environment. It's much easier for us to go get dollar beers at the Louisville City FC game when the tickets for the USL team are $12, $15 instead of MLS where it's $50, $60 and you're going to more of a game event type of situation.
My thing is this, man. I've lived here too long and I'm sick and tired of the whole Kool-Aid of every sport we get. Well, it's a great stepping stone and it's going to be amazing and they're doing great and they're getting the fans there and we got everybody. We're going to build an arena. Dude, this ain't the first time this has happened, man.
It's the first time we've had consistent success. Though. We've never had the Bats get this type of love.
Man, forget the Bats. Forget all that.
Man, forget the Bats.
With the NBA team, with the NBA team, at one point we even tried to get a football team here. That was a drastic fail. That was back in the 90s. and even now, here's the thing. It's great. Dude, you're talking about the same city that couldn't even keep an arena football team that was smacking football teams back in the day. The New Orleans Voodoo, they actually beat the Louisville Fire in the championship game. They became an official AFL team. And you know what Louisville has now? Nothing.
But I think that's the point, though. People are actually coming out to support Louisville City. They're getting 8,000 people, like I said, on a Wednesday. And you look, the biggest thing that they're doing is not, they have found the niche in the market. Look, a football team is not going to work around here. We have the Indianapolis Colts. We have the Louisville Cardinals, the Kentucky Wildcats. There's the football fan bases. That's it. The NBA, maybe that might work, but we have the Pacers and we have, you know, some teams around here, obviously college, that are going to take the higher standard. But we don't have a soccer thing around here. This is the thing to do because we've never, it's the first. So why not try it? And so far, it's been successful. If you keep pushing it down the road and people keep jumping on the bandwagon, which has happened throughout the first 4 years, why not keep pushing that narrative? Because so far, the train's moving pretty well and they're having a lot of success.
That's a good point, Clay. All right, guys, we need to wrap it up. This has been the first episode of Aural Pleasure. We're getting ready to play the sound of the week. But if you want to follow our podcast, Miles, where can the guys hear it?
Oh, yeah, man, you can always hit me up on Twitter at Black and Miles. And it's Miles with a Z because someone stole my S.
Check it out on my Twitter at Clay_Ables.
And I'm at Billy R Sports. You can listen to it on Spreaker, Anchor, and eventually, we hope, at least iTunes. All right, let's hear the sound of the week.
Louisville hush money for my young gunners. Rick Pitino, I take them to strip clubs and casinos.